Sports Original WEEI filling in for the Greg Hill Show on this Memorial Day Monday. We had the leads. We've talked about dreams, nightmares, aliens, the whole gamut. We have really run in the first hour of the program. But Mego's lead this morning was about your Boston Red Sox and Alex Cora mentioning 10-game winning streaks. Jeff in Chicopee wanted to talk about the Red Sox longest winning streak in a while. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning. Happy Memorial Day.
Same to you.
I was just looking, and Cora's talking about a 10-game winning streak and this and that. The Red Sox haven't had a 10-game winning streak. I can't remember.
Mego gave it to you in early 2018.
Right. And the longest winning streak since 2020 is 6 games. How's he going to win 8 or 10 in a row? He's got to go.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the call. Do you believe that Alex Cora's inability to put together a winning streak means he needs to be fired or let go, or is that more kind of just one problem in a great selection of problems for Alex Cora?
Well, I just don't understand why it's something that he invokes like it's what's gotten the team back on track before.
Yeah.
The way that he says it is, you guys know me. I love a 10-game winning streak. That's how we find our way. It's kind of how it sounds. And they don't do that. They haven't done that since 2018.
And that 2018 team was, like, historically good in the regular season.
I'm looking up, and this is not including playoffs, but regular season, even before 2018, the last time that they had over 10 or more wins, winning streak, was 2016. So, and it's like, it's not an easy thing to do.
No.
To just, the way that he talks about it is like, you know how we get back into this? We rip off one of those 10-game win streaks. And it's like, you just had a homestand where you went up against one of the worst teams in the major leagues.
Oh, and in your
and
division,
you guys went 5-5. You're a bit far away from the 10-game winning streak that's going to get you back on track. To me, it was just an odd goal to set, or an odd reference point that he was making, as if it's, We all know Alex, once he gets that 10-game winning streak, it's World Series bound. That happened one time.
It's just so weird. Like, maybe focus on something you have talked about and winning series. Like, make sure you win the series against Baltimore. Yeah, let's
making contact.
Score a couple runs. Score more than one run.
These are small strategies that seem to carry weight with the team. Okay, put the ball in play. Let's go. You know, get your leadoff hitter on base. Let's go. This makes sense. This stuff makes sense. Putting Trevor Story at cleanup and talking about 10-game win streaks. Oh. This stuff is just
talk
like,
about a guy who has struggled.
You he might as well just be like, you know, by the time you get to the ALCS, the likeliness of you going to the World Series sure does go up. What are we talking about?
No kidding. Like, maybe get there for maybe get to the playoffs first in general. But it also just speaks to kind of, I think, the entire dysfunction that has gone over there.
Don't get
me
started.
Between the whole Rafael Devers saga of, you're not playing third base, you're DHing, and he was complaining, and then, okay, fine, I'll just play DH, and he starts terrible, then he starts tearing the cover off the ball. Hey, we may need to switch you to first base. I'm not playing first base. John Henry has to play out there. Like, it's just an absolute, it's been like a nightmare for them when it comes to actually just handling their own business, which seems weird. Like, they were so prepared heading into the season. It felt like, from the outside, it's like, oh, this team's going to be pretty good. They got some talent. They brought in Bregman. They brought in Crochet. Okay, we're ready. We're cooking. Let's make a playoff run here. And then all the stuff that you thought had been handled in previous seasons, the communication between the GM and the coach, or the manager, and the manager kind of handling the locker room or the dressing room, whatever, the clubhouse, it felt like all that stuff was good. And now that is a complete and utter nightmare. And the players are like suffering from it, like especially the offense. The offense has like suffered from whatever is going on in that clubhouse.
John Henry and Alex Cora's Red Sox, I said this on Saturday, they're the Irish side of my family. Like, it's honestly, they're just my family. It's, I'm in Boston. My mom calls me. She's like, are you coming up to Maine this weekend? Me, yeah, we're going to be up there Friday at 6 p.m. My dad calls me 2 hours later. Are you coming up to Maine this weekend? Yeah, I talked to mom. We're going to be up there at 6 p.m. My brother calls me and he's like, well, who's picking me up at the airport? And I'm like nobody talks to each other.
Zero communication.
And then people get pissed off. Because there's such a lack of communication. It starts with before spring training, in the off season, when, according to Sean McAdam from Mass Live, they're going for Alex Bregman, and everybody in the world knows it. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it on radio. Everybody knows it. And finally, Devers goes to ownership and in the front office and asks, what's going on with the guy that you're bringing in who plays my position and he's really good at it? Like, are you guys going for this? And they say, no, that's just media rumors. That's weird. That is a weird way to handle your superstar. And I'm not shedding tears for Devers because I don't think he comes out great, looking great in any of this.
I agree.
But it's a weird way to handle it. And then you get this stupid impasse in spring training. Core has to go smooth that over, finally be like, okay, you're the new Poppy. You're going to embrace being DH, whatever. And then Tristan Casas goes down and gets to the point where, again, according to Sean McAdam, he said Craig Breslow comes over and goes, how about we move Devers to first where he doesn't play and out of DH, even though we told him to put his glove away. And Corey's like, how about you, Craig?
Yeah, you go tell him. I'm not
Craig,
telling
you
that.
Tell him, to the point that John Henry has to fly out to Kansas City and have a one-on-one candid and direct and honest conversation with Devers about his role in the franchise. And then we get back here and it's like, fine, instead of talking to Devers about playing third or even raising that like as a realistic option, we're going to bring up Marcelo Meyer, who can't find his keys because he doesn't know what's happening. So he has to drive out from Worcester. And it's like, that's, I'm excited to have Meyer up, so I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, 'cause
wherever you want to put him seems to work. Defensively, he's talented enough, and eventually maybe you'll be able to shift something around when Alex Bregman comes back. Maybe that's bye-bye for Trevor Story because he looks really terrible. So maybe it'll be for the best, but it's one of these things where it's like you don't even say Devers' name on Friday when Bregman goes down.
No, it's been one of these situations where someone keeps screwing up over and over again and yet somehow ended up in the right place. Like, all along, Devers probably should have just stayed at DH and not gone to first base or gone back to third base, because then it allows you to call up Marcelo Meyer. It also allows you to put, like, Christian Campbell wherever you want. You have more kind of options by bringing Marcelo Meyer up. He can play short. He can play third. He can play second. He can play anywhere in the infield, basically. And so now you actually get one of your young guys up here, and Roman Anthony's now on deck to make the major league roster and really kind of start this younger revolution for your Boston Red Sox team. And Rafael Devers is tearing off the cover at the ball at DH, so we'll just keep him there. He's fine. He's happy. But it was a whole mess to get to this point. Like, it could have been way cleaner. It could have been the organization could have been come out and said, yeah, Rafael Devers is our DH. We're not going to move him around anymore. We, you know, may have screwed that up in spring training. We might have, led him astray and not necessarily told him the God's honest truth about Alex Bregman and him taking his position. So now we want to stay true to Rafael Devers. He's going to stay at DH. He's going to continue to swing the bat as great as he's been doing, and we're going to figure it out from there. But instead, they're like, no, like, yeah, we're hemming and hawing. Like, oh, like, Devers at first base is still under consideration. Craig Breslow says so. But Alex Cora's like, yeah, I'm not talking to him.
To me, it's like it's a bigger conversation than the Devers miscommunications. It's not just the whole thing that happened with first base and third base before that. It's just constant dysfunction and lack of communication. Going back to the Crochet start, where afterwards, when Crochet was yanked just over five innings pitched and he was doing awesome, and they're leaning on the bullpen again. And Cora says after the game, well, we were planning for a short start for him at the beginning. Like, this was a management thing. And Crochet says nobody told him that. It's like, well, maybe can we
There's no communication anywhere.
Can we communicate a little bit? Can we?
It just seems difficult.
It makes them look so unserious.
Yeah.
And for a team that is so mediocre when the ownership is actually spending money on the payroll, they just don't look like, to quote one of my favorites, Succession, they do not look like serious people.
No, they don't look like they are actually in it to win it. There's zero kind of connectivity between Craig Breslow and Alex Cora and the clubhouse. And it's creating this aura of disaster.
I wouldn't even go as far as disaster. I'd just say slop. Sloppy Joe right now.
So it is sloppy right now, but like it is I feel like it is just kind of like working its way towards disaster.
You think they're teetering?
Yes. Okay. Like, that's what it feels like, doesn't
teetering,
it?
Teetering,
slipping. I know the kids are big with that, the aura word. So, but like, it's just, it is giving off negative aura. Massive, massive negative energy.
I think it's just
emanating from
the Red
Sox.
It's just another season of this team with a big shrug. Meh. Meh, well. And it's like, don't worry, once that 10-game winning streak starts going, oh, you won't believe what you're going to see.
Do you think they'll actually have a 10-game winning streak this season, yes or no?
No.
Yeah, of course not.
I don't think so. Watch it start with Milwaukee. I hope so.
I hope so, too. God, I hope so. The Red Sox face the Milwaukee Brewers today in a day game, 2:10 first pitch right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Will Fleming and Mike Monaco will have the call for that game for you right here on WEEI. Text Mego, 413 text. Core debate, pretty simple. Other than 2018, when, as Shine pointed out, anybody could have managed that team to a World Series, Cora has outkicked his coverage relative to expectations. That would be never. Other teams like the Diamondbacks and Pirates and Tigers and Oakland seem to figure out how to be competitive with no-name players or small payrolls.
I don't know if you want to list yourself amongst them.
No, but I understand the point where
2021.
Yeah, 2021 was a really good season. Like, I thought that was a good season. You get to the ALCS, you have some success, and unfortunately you just fall a little short. And it was probably to the better team, because that was the year I believe they lost to the Houston Astros that year. And so that was probably the better team, and that's, but you did get there. And but since 2021, like, this team has been nothing.
My feeling, and I will get into this deeper later in the show because I know we want to move to Patriots, but I just cannot remember anybody else in Boston sports, coaching-wise, who's had the leash that Cora has had. Seems to have the job security that Cora has with the Red Sox. It's kind of unbelievable
it's
when
insane.
You look at it. Guy went through a suspension, came back, and has been in the postseason once. Since 2020.
Got a contract extension for finishing like last and middle of the division.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It makes me feel that this is, just like the Rafael Devers contract, more about PR and the perception of the team among the fan base, making sure everybody's still getting into Fenway, getting their park tours, buying the jerseys, going for bobblehead nights, going for Jerry Garcia night.
Hey, those.
And that's what it's about.
Those
it's about
City
the
Connect
museum.
Jerseys are pretty nice, though.
Yeah. They're fine. I mean, I guess. The B could have been improved. I don't like that big blocky B.
You don't?
No, it looks like something that somebody designed on Microsoft Paint. Like, what is that font? I'm sorry if it has something like super meaningful, if it's like the Green Monster font.
I didn't know you were such a font elitist.
Of course I am. Graphic design is my passion.
Is it really?
No.
617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here, filling in for the Greg Hill Show. As Mego mentioned, we're pivoting to Patriots coming up next year. But right now, let's get you caught up with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Sox fell to the Orioles yesterday, 5-1, end up splitting the four-game series with the Orioles. Marcelo Meyer ended up 2-for-4 with a run scored in his second career start. Sox are out in Milwaukee to take on the Brewers this afternoon. First pitch, 2:10 right here on the Shaw's on Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Will Fleming and Mike Monaco have the call of the game for you here. Joe Weil has the MassMutual pregame show at 1:10. MassMutual Insurance Planning Investments. The Knicks overcame a 20-point deficit in Game 3 against the Pacers to get their first win in the series, 106-100. Oklahoma City and Minnesota face off in Game 4 of their series tonight. Tip off at 8:30. OKC leads that series 2-1. The Edmonton Oilers beat the Dallas Stars 6-1 yesterday afternoon. They take a 2-1 series lead out west in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. And the Panthers look to close out the East as they host the Hurricanes tonight. Puck drop is at 8. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Mango and Chime here, filling in for the Greg Hill Show on Memorial Day Monday. We've been talking a lot of Red Sox today. A little bit of Celtics, a little bit of dreams and nightmares. But right now, hopefully it won't be a nightmare season once again for the New England Patriots, who I would like to discuss, as they started OTAs this week. We made a huge deal about Drake May having a 4-interception day. Followed that up, apparently, according to Mike Reese, indoors, avoiding the rain with a turnover-free day. So my guy Drake looking just fine. People overreacting once again.
When the media's not there, he's perfect?
Hey, and I'm not saying he's perfect, but
turnover-free? When the media's not there, he's great.
Yep.
Don't worry.
It's like me playing golf. When everybody's there watching me, I'm terrible. But when I'm by myself or just with my dad, I play great.
Yeah. It's nothing like certain presidents who they were like, don't worry, in meetings, he's great. When the media is not around, he's sharp as a tack.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He is as good as it gets. But so, Mega, one of the other things, too, that I saw, Mike Reese had his notes yesterday morning. And one of the things he mentioned was Morgan Moses recovering from right knee surgery. And so you and I talked about this a little bit on Saturday.
Yes, Morgan Moses is the right tackle who they brought in.
Correct. Morgan Moses is the free agent right tackle they brought in from the New York Jets. And he had an injury which he sustained against the Patriots last year, got surgery on his knee. And so he's recovering and coming back from that. Now, with that in mind, we don't know exactly where his health stands. It seems like he's progressing in the right direction, but we don't know exactly how much he's going to hold up. For being a 34-year-old veteran right tackle coming off a knee injury, you don't really know where he stands. You have no idea what you're going to get out of Will Campbell. As you pointed out Saturday, Garrett Bradbury could be a starting center, or he could be more of a backup center on a lot of NFL teams. One of the major questions I have entering this season right now is this offensive line actually better than last year, or are we just throwing lipstick on a pig?
This offensive line has to be better. That's like not exactly where I'd go. Are they better than last year? Because it's like having a broken down car and then buying a used car and not being sure if you got sold a lemon or not. Mm-hmm. And being like, well, it's better than having a broken down car that's not going anywhere. You know, like, yes, they are improved. I just think that there's still a lot of question marks, and it just goes to show how hard it is to repair your offensive line when your drafts have been as abysmal as they've been over the last decade plus for the Patriots, especially when it comes to this position. Like, we talk about the drafts for wide receivers all the time, and everybody can talk about the N'Keal Harrys until they go blue in the face, but Isaiah Wynn was probably just as damaging. And you leaned on Trent Brown when Skarnecchia is not there anymore, and he comes in big as a house in training camp and have to move on from him. And now where you're at, as you said, and we've been so focused on Will Campbell because it feels like we were just in the draft. And so you look at Will Campbell and the arms and the shoulders, and is he going to actually be your starting left tackle? Well, beyond that, as you said, left guard, you just pencil in Cole Strange there. Cole Strange played 3 games last year. He's played 13 games over the last 2 seasons, and he was one of your first round. He was a first round pick.
That's correct.
And everybody mocked it at the time, but you think like, well, at least it's a starting left guard. You haven't been able to depend on him at all. I'm saying like that was best case scenario. It's not even a premium position on the team, and then you get Garrett Bradbury, which you have to do because you release David Andrews, and okay, that's fine, but I don't think he's an upgrade from healthy David Andrews at all. I think he's more of a probably backup level talent in a lot of the league. You go to Micah Nwenu, who's going back to his natural guard position, even though you're paying him tackle money. He looked big at OTAs last week.
Normally a good guard to look big at OTAs isn't exactly what you want.
And then you have Morgan Moses, who's coming back from a surgery last year, and he's 34, and he's right tackle. He seems like a great guy. I think he's going to be captain type material in terms of his character, and he says all the right things, and he seems to have a wonderful approach. But I still think there's a lot of question marks across this offensive line, and so now you're just really leaning on Josh McDaniels to figure it out and make it a comfortable spot for Drake May to play. And I think it's just something that they did a lot of work on in the offseason, but TBD for how good they're actually going to be.
I would not be shocked if by the time Stephon Diggs takes the field, the offensive line looks very different than how it's going to look right, or how it looks right now. Right? Like if the only two guys left on the offensive line are, you know, Will Campbell and Mike Onwenu, and those
and
other
three
positions.
And where's Will Campbell?
At left tackle.
Okay.
But like all those other positions, your left guard, your center, and your right tackle are all different people than what you start the season
with.
I wouldn't be shocked.
If they can't play Morgan Moses, then that's a big problem.
Well, I worry very much about his health. Like, it's just 34-year-old coming off a knee injury. I don't know how you can fully depend on him to play a 17-game season and expect him to be a really good right tackle for 17 games at that age. Look, I hope that he does. I like him. I think that in the past, he has been very good. Ninko spoke very highly of him when he joined us at the Roadshow on Friday. But, like, look, offensive linemen are not built to last forever. And he's getting to the point in his career where he's starting to trend in the downward direction. So is there a chance that you have to trot out Vedarian Lowe or Caden Wallace to play right tackle by week 5?
That would be tough. I'll also say, like, I know people don't get hot and bothered about offensive line talk. So turning it back to your quarterback, Drake May going into his sophomore year, I think a lot of people, because he has this different offensive coordinator who everybody knows very well.
Yep.
And you bring in Steph Diggs, and people are excited about Kyle Williams. And
love Kyle Williams.
You do try to reinforce the offensive line. But if the offensive line doesn't look good again, like, how many years are fans at least going to excuse quarterback play for the offensive line? We're coming off this year with Drake May where everything was so bad that anything that Drake May did was a positive. Even the turnovers, you're just like, hey, some of those are deflections from the receivers. He's got nothing around him. The coaching staff is inept. So Drake May, it's just anything you can do. He was playing with house money last year. How long does that sustain when we went through this with Mac Jones? We went through this to an extent with Bailey Zappi. Like, the offensive line is rough. And now we're in this era with Drake May where it's not like they have solved the entire offensive line.
No, they definitely haven't. And I think it ultimately will boil down to how many wins he can get and he can just kind of eke out. If he gets 6 or 7.
What if they're winning because of the defense?
I don't know that it matters. It depends. It's going to be situation based, right? If he's not turning the ball over a ton, they're winning by low margins, but it's because their defense is playing good and he's being smart with the football, people aren't going to get mad at him because he's not turning the football over. If they're barely winning because he's turning it over a ton, but the defense is just playing out of their minds, that's when people might get frustrated. I just look at it like it's going to be if the offensive line isn't figured out and the receiving corps isn't figured out, it is going to be very Justin Herbert-esque because there's going to be people like me, the nerds who are like, he's really good.
Yes.
Like, whatever you think, he's really good. I understand he's not winning a lot of football games, but he's really good at football. Trust me. Like, you just need to believe me. And then the people who are not the nerds will look at it and go, he wins 6 games, he won 7 games, he won 8 games. Like, he barely makes the playoffs 1 year. Like, how can you call this guy good? And it's going to be one of those things where it's like, is this guy actually good at football or is he not? When is he ever going to elevate his team to the next level? Is he able to do that? And there's going to be those questions because the nerds to this day will still tell you all about how good Justin Herbert is.
How you say the nerds, you should say us nerds about yourself.
Yeah, us nerds will tell you about how good at football Justin Herbert is. He's a top 7 quarterback in football. He's electric. He has an insane arm. He's unbelievably talented, and it's the situation around him that has caused him to not win as much as he should. And it's going to be very similar with Drake May if this persists. And it's going to cause a massive chasm in Patriots fandom,
okay.
I believe.
So because we love doing all the Josh Allen comparisons, the Justin Herbert comparisons, mm-hmm. I'm going to put you on the spot only because I have mine too, like right in my mind's eye, I know what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
What is your ceiling player for who Drake May will be? And what is your floor player for who Drake May will be?
Okay. I think ceiling wise, Drake May could
BF.
Be... You're gonna hate this. And I want you to realize that this is not the off the field stuff. It is simply on the field. I think... at his ceiling, Drake May could be Aaron Rodgers.
Oh.
Like, I think at his ceiling. And that is...
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Think he's that cerebral of a player on the field?
I think he can be. Yeah. Especially when he's comfortable in the offense and kind of has full command of it.
Isn't it funny how we just hear about processing with, like, these slow-ass, unathletic guys?
Yeah.
And with Drake, it's like, oh, by the way, maybe he'll be Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, look, I think... It's funny because the two quarterbacks I go to, I gravitate towards at ceiling are Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers.
That's my ceiling.
Which is weird.
Actually, I changed mine. Mine's Elway.
I think Elway is just, I think
it's a little bit of that crazy-ass gunslinger.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's
I feel
why
like L.A. is like elevated Favre, like crazy town.
Sure. That's why I put like Allen with L.A. I just, as much as people want to say Drake May can be Josh Allen 2.0, I don't necessarily believe that. Like, I think they're very different in a lot of ways. But I do think he's insanely athletic. He has an unbelievable arm. I think he's a lot smarter than people give him credit for. And so that's kind of why that's why I just immediately look at Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre. Like, it's somewhere in there is the ceiling. And if you're talking floor, I think you kind of nailed it on Saturday. It's Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
It's Jameis Winston.
I think worst case scenario, Drake May turns into Jameis Winston.
Yep. You nailed that.
May he only have half the personality, you know?
It'll be
a nightmare football-wise, but it'll be a delight in post-game press conferences.
If he ever ended up with somebody like Bruce Arians, he could have a 40-touchdown, 30-interception season. Like, that would be the floor. Like, that would absolutely be in play.
So even if it's a total sideshow, like if it goes totally haywire, you still end up with Jameis Winston. I mean, you can still win some games.
Yeah, I mean, look, that Buccaneers team was 7-9 the year he threw 30 picks.
There you go.
Like, that's not a bad... Granted, that was a good football team. Tom Brady came in and won a Super Bowl with not long after. But, like, regardless, I mean, he can still win football games. And at the very least, they're exciting, right? With the Mac Jones, Bailey Zappi, Brian Hoyer-led teams, like, a lot of those games were just boring and ugly, like the 6-0 loss to the Chargers or 10-7 loss to the Colts. Like, those games suck. At least if he is Jameis Winston, at least there's going to be fireworks, right?
You'll at least be scoring 20 plus points.
Yeah, like it's going to be that Broncos Monday Night Football game where he throws 7 touchdowns, 3 of them to the other team, but he throws 7 of them.
And this is where it's kind of tough to judge from Drake's rookie year, is that because he came in midway through and Jacoby Brissett was so unproductive.
He was so bad.
Leading up to that, like, just so unproductive. Not even just bad, just not putting points on the board. When you look at that team last year, they're last or second to last in everything in terms of putting up points. And so you go, okay, like, what is it really going to look like for a 17-game season with Drake May? How many points are you actually going to average? And if your defense is really good, then I understand why people get high on the team.
Yeah, with Drake May, your points should be in the top half of the league. You should be, at worst, like 16. And at best, probably 6 or 7. I don't think you're necessarily a top 5. You can't possibly be. Unless he is even better than I think he is, I don't think you can jump to a top 5 offense in the matter of seconds. So that's why I really kind of realistically expect you to get in that 10 to 12 range. I think for me, that is the ideal finish. It's that, you know, classic Josh McDaniels with Mac Jones offense where it was they finished like 11th or something in total offense and in points scored. And I'm like, okay, that's a good spot to be at coming off of a 4-win season.
The big marker for me, just like, you know, that the page is finally turning and people are reinvesting hope. What will it take for people to actually buy the stupid jersey? Because everybody went out and bought the stupid Mac Jones jersey when there was one week where it looked like they might be in the Super Bowl. Everybody was crazy off that win streak.
They were going nuts.
They had the kind of win streak that Alex Cora is just dreaming of these days. And so that everybody, every time you go down to Gillette, everybody has the duct tape over the jersey. So what will it take for fans to actually buy the Drake jersey? Because he kept the same stupid number, as is his right, but now nobody's buying his jersey.
Like a 3-game win streak, and in that he
That's
goes...
That's it? A 3-game win streak?
Oh, I think like if he opened the season like 3-0 and started with like 10 touchdowns and 2 picks,
I think it's going to be...
The jerseys are flying off the shelves.
They're going to have to be like 4-2.
Okay.
They're going to have to be 4-2.
Okay.
And then... And maybe,
he has to be playing well, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. If they're winning because of the defense and he's throwing like 3 picks a game, nobody's buying
those jerseys.
That jersey
are sitting there.
Everybody's looking at him like he's.
I'll keep showing up with mine. alternate between my Drake May and my Travion Henderson jersey.
I was going to say, did you get the Travion Henderson jersey?
I did. So I actually, thank you very much to Stacey James, sent me one.
Aww.
He heard me ranting and raving about how much I love Travion Henderson, how excited I am for him, and the Patriots sent me the very first Travion Henderson jersey.
I have to ask you, so please. Besides this workplace and game days, do you wear those jerseys? Do you ever wear them to social occasions?
Not generally. No, I save them for game days or like coming into work here just because it's fun to wear my jerseys to work.
So you don't wear them as a fashion statement? Like if you were going to a cookout, your buddy's cookout, you wouldn't wear one?
I would wear an old throwback jersey to like a
cookout.
What's
the diff?
Because I like to keep the newer ones clean. Like it's just like I don't want to get
they're a, like your collectibles. Like if I, this like, is such a nerd.
So it is. No. It's not a collectibles thing. It's as someone who enjoys eating a lot of food and enjoys going to a lot of cookouts. It is now cookout season. It's Memorial Day. A lot of people had cookouts this weekend.
Can you wear a bib?
I'm not going to wear a bib, but I also don't want to get, you know, ketchup and mustard all over my brand new, nice Travion Henderson jersey or Drake May jersey. And so I would not wear them to a cookout. I'd pull out the old powder blue Sean Merriman or the Packers Clay Matthews or something along those lines, and I'd rock that puppy at a cookout. And
so it's not like
it, the other ones in the closet.
Because some girls, like I know you guys talk about the icks on this show.
Yep.
Some girls find the jerseys on grown men icks.
For sure. And I get that. A lot, even guys find that as icks
for
other guys.
I think it's mean. I think it's mean to yuck that yum because, first of all, jerseys are insanely expensive these days.
Agreed.
Like if you're going to invest in a real jersey, these things are like 200 plus a lot of cases. I just got my Jaden Daniels jersey. It was
nice.
The first jersey that I've gotten in probably 15 years.
Nice.
My husband was like, don't get it. You're cursing him. Like he's going to.
Which one? Did you go with the maroon?
Yeah.
Nice.
Of course. And I was also for a little while, like I was like, I don't know if I'm going to want this because what if they change the name again? Like there's so much uncertainty around the Washington situation that I was like, okay, fine. I'm finally going to bite the bullet. But I feel like girls, if you wear a jersey, everybody's like, oh, cute. She's got her jersey. She likes her team.
Yeah.
Guys, like there's this whole thing of grown men wearing jerseys and people being snarky about it.
Yeah.
I think let the men wear their little jerseys.
Yeah.
If they want to worship,
Mego.
If they want to worship men who are younger than them and more athletic than them and make a lot more money than them and those are their superheroes, let them wear their little costumes to the cookout.
Yeah. I especially love the older jerseys just because they're bigger, more flowy. You got a lot more room to move, play
we
yard
need more
games.
Cuts. That's the thing I hate, by the way. Mm. The women's cut jerseys.
Oh, they're
what is that?
Super tight.
They're a travesty. It's like if I'm wearing a football jersey or basketball jersey, I don't want it to be like this weird V-cut.
Form-fitting.
Like, yeah, form-fitting little T-shirt jersey
thing. Well, my
thing
is,
it looks so dorky.
I look at it like, how would you ever fit pads under that? You can't.
The
like,
women's jersey?
Well, no, just even the men's jerseys. Like, even like my like Drake Mayer,
Trayvon
Henderson.
You're like, I want this Henderson. To be realistic.
Well, no, it's not that. But like, it's just like, I'm like, how do you fit pads under this thing? Like, you would need like a 3X to get pads under this puppy.
My husband is obsessed with hockey sweaters. I know that they're called. So he's got
a hockey sweater.
He's got a ton of hockey sweaters, and I let him wear those ugly things around. I don't care. It makes him happy. Like,
exactly.
I think they look ridiculous. I don't care. Wear it.
I do love a good basketball jersey. Those are great because they're so summer appropriate. You sun's out, guns out, rocking the basketball jersey.
The one thing about the basketball jersey is there's like you learn a lot about people's armpits. And I don't know if I want those pits completely out in public. Like that's the one thing. They can be a scary thing for men. Like it's just you're like, whoa, okay. Yeah. It's sometimes too much.
It's too much?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, like men
too
talk
much
a lot
pits.
They talk a lot about women's pit hair. It's like we're not in love with that either. Like on you.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it's natural, but I don't need to see it.
That's true. And nobody.
It doesn't need to look like you have two beards coming out of the sides of your Tatum jersey. It's just like, it's not the best look.
That's fair. And at the same time, you also don't want to wear like the white t-shirt underneath the jersey.
No.
Because that makes you look like a total dweeb.
Oh, totally. That's like wearing the t-shirt in the pool. Can't be doing that. Can't be doing that.
Pool t-shirts, not for me. not for me. 617-779-7937. Been talking Pats here, or jerseys. You can jump in on jerseys too. I suppose that's fine.
Let your men wear their jerseys.
Yeah, exactly. Let your men wear your jerseys. It's Mego and Scheim here filling in for the Greg Hill Show on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego and Scheim here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Filling in for the Greg Hill Show this morning on a Memorial Day Monday. Taking you up until 10 a.m. Red Sox afternoon game today right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. 2:10 first pitch out in Milwaukee for the Sox today. We hit on the Sox. We hit a little bit on the Celtics in my lead. We just got on the Patriots. But one thing we missed, Mego, is Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson. A little extra news came out right around Friday or so. Pablo Torre did some more investigative reporting, found the location of the ring, the illustrious ring cam footage of Bill Belichick, found out doesn't seem like it was, in fact, Jordan that leaked it. Instead, it was the Airbnb owners that seemed to have leaked the footage. Do you think any differently, more or less, of the Belichick-Jordan relationship or of Belichick now that you kind of know that, oh, Jordan didn't actually release this this footage to try and force Bill's hand in their relationship or gain traction or gain fame of any kind? It was the Airbnb owner.
No, I'll say above everything else, because I do know that Memorial Day weekend is a big weekend for Gowie on Nantucket.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of surprised we haven't gotten any content from there.
It
is such a big weekend, and I feel like Jordan, from tweeting at Airbnb after that came out, and the Airbnb owners gave a goofy interview, and it's
so weird.
Her tweeting, like, she doesn't really tweet, but she only tweets now when she's pissed off at people and like trying to.
I kind of like that.
It's just like, are you just learning this social media game? And Jordan Hudson, like, I don't know. I guess on one hand, it makes me feel like maybe she's slightly less devious than I thought, because I thought maybe even someone connected to her leaked that video. But on the other hand, I wonder if this is a sign now that it's been all quiet through this holiday weekend, that Bill's trying to, you know, get things a little bit more under control with at least the messaging and the public persona, because it's been so far off the rails. I think the biggest thing she did was that stupid old bae with my old bae post, which is not cute. It's very corny.
As a fan of Old Bay, I liked it.
Well, I love Old Bay. I'm from Maryland.
That's true.
I continue to feel like this is so predictable for most older rich men who decide that they want to go and have a younger relationship. And it's like that we've all known the May December relationships, and that's fine. Everybody's consenting adults. The weirder thing is just, like, I think this would be just almost as strange if it was a 50-year-old who was operating the same way as Jordan. If it was a 50-year-old who was so public, who was so thirsty for the fame and attention, and seemingly operating so much of Bill's personal business. Yeah. And I mean personal business as Bill Belichick the brand, Bill Belichick the book tour, Bill Belichick, like, not necessarily his coaching at UNC, because he's been very quick to say she's involved in managing me as a celebrity, not me as a coach. But I still can't get over Jordan stepping in and answering football questions in that CBS Sunday morning interview. That's crazy. I can't. And so part of it is, of course, the age thing and everything around her. Mom has the sex shop on Cape Cod. It's very salacious. But at the same time, it's just this dynamic of the relationship with somebody who so clearly seems determined to be a famous person. There's this other side of this where I think we're increasingly just so accepting of that as a society, that so many people want to be just famous, even if it means being notorious. I just feel so distant from it as a person.
Yeah, it's such a weird situation. I don't know. Because, like, when Bill was with Linda, you never saw or heard from Linda this much.
Well, if you did, it would be so strategic. It was Linda putting them on the cover of the stupid Nantucket magazine that only people in Nantucket care about. Or Linda being, like, posting once every 6 months with the doc, mm-hmm. or some holiday party that they had, which then apparently Jordan crashed.
Yes.
Bought tickets to, but crashed in a social aspect. So again, and we all probably assumed, okay, like that's the type of relationship that Bill has. He, Linda has a lot of her own thing, and he'll like play into that a little bit. But at the end of the day, Bill's the same in his personal life as he is seemingly in his work life. And I think this departure is what's so jarring for everybody.
Yeah. Now, do you think this will leak into his football abilities? Just because, so CBS ranked all of the college coaches across the NCAA and ranked Bill Belichick 54th in the nation. They seem to think that he has either lost a step or he's not going to be as good with UNC as he was in the NFL, or that those years without Tom Brady are, in fact, indicative of exactly who Bill Belichick is. Do you think that that is kind of where they're at, or do you believe that this whole Jordan thing is now seeping into what people in the college football sphere believe will affect his coaching ability?
Yes to all of it. Wouldn't you agree? Yes to all of it.
Yeah.
And
oh,
he's
yeah.
unproven at the college level.
Completely unproven. Entirely
so,
unproven.
You know, apparently
with a team that's not necessarily some like college football powerhouse,
he has this QB that he gets from Purdue that apparently was going to be the starter all through their spring ball that they were playing, and he basically told him to go back in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not sure that it's the disorganization that we're seeing on display with him. I understand why you would assume that that carries over to the football program completely. Like, I would have been shocked if he was projected to be a top 10 coach.
Yeah, I don't think that, but I don't know, 54 behind, you know, Vanderbilt's Chuck Leah or whatever his last name is. That seems
Shime,
a
some people
odd
don't
to me.
Even know if he's going to make it to the season.
He's
I think he's making it through at least one season. He might be one and done.
Why would he? What? Whose benefit would it? So I think it was, I forget if it was Jones and Keefe were talking about this Friday, but I'm pretty sure that, like, if Bill Belichick wants out, he has that buyout clause.
Mm-hmm.
But
June 1st.
Correct. But if UNC wants him out, they have
million.
To. $30 million. Exactly. And so they're not going to pay $30 million for him to never coach a football game. He is not going to take the job and then immediately buy himself out after June 1st just because. Like, you're taking the job for a reason. You want to be there. So, look, anybody who thinks he's not going to coach a game is insane. Now, more than a season? Okay, now we can have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But he is going to be the UNC head football coach for at least a year. 100%.
I agree. I understand the healthy amount of skepticism around it. Also, if you're a kid at UNC right now, like, what is your perspective? You don't even know Belichick, the NFL coach. Like, think about how young these kids are.
If you're a defensive player on UNC, though, like, this is your opportunity. At the college level, it's win football games on defense. Because it's the one thing he's always been good at is building a defense for this specific opponent and playing to his strengths and taking away his opponent's strengths.
Well, looking very forward to
disaster,
the Navy offense that he'll be running there.
Yeah, it'll be like the wing T run 100 times Georgia Tech triple option offense. But that defense is going to be nasty.
Shime, I have a question that I want to ask you at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
I mean, it's 8 o'clock now, but when we come back from
this
very quick break.
It's Mego and Shime here filling in for the Greg Hill Show. Mego has a question for me to start the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get to that next here on WEEI.